Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Not seen that.
Hello there, and welcome to Fan Critical and this latest edition of How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? Whereas the kids are calling it Hutafinst.
Yeah, stealing my gags.
Yeah.
Catchy.
Certainly in Finland. So, yeah. That's how it would sound there, wouldn't it?
That's good. Yes.
No worries.
Well, welcome one and all to this latest episode. Where we discuss some films that have been hiding in our closets. Yeah, there's more to it, John. Closets. Give me a sec. Some films that have been hiding in our closets of shame. Films that maybe for years we've pretended to have seen or have just hidden from the truth. This all started about a year ago, I think, when I revealed I hadn't seen RoboCop. To much disdain from my fellow Fan Critical members. And since then, we've come across some absolute shockers. There have been some terrible misses. That
Dead or Alive, you're coming with me.
Yeah,
sorry.
Very good.
Don't know why. RoboCop. Yeah,
thanks for that. I know that now because I have seen it. But I would say now, given the caliber of some of the films that some of us in the Fan Critical family haven't seen, I'd say RoboCop is kind of a middling movie.
Yeah.
There have been some shockers. I'm going to say that today's isn't quite in that shocking ballpark. It's a film that I love, and we'll come to it very soon. And I know it's a film that a lot of people love, but it is a little bit of a cult classic. Without going into too much detail, I'm going to introduce the rest of my panel members today by likening them to a character from this film. And if you haven't worked out what film it is, you will have by the time I'm done. First of all, we have our very own Dread Pirate Roberts, our bringer of terror. It's John. Hello, John.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, take that one. Definitely.
Happy with that?
I thought it'd be more of a Fezzik
or whatever he's called.
Well, nearly. I've got in my notes crossed out a Greenlandic giant, John. But yeah, cancel that. We've got our very own Inigo Montoya, our swashbuckling Lucy. How are you, Lucy?
Hey, cool. Yeah, happy now that I'm Inigo.
Yeah,
I might be Buttercup.
We get all the. Why would you be Buttercup? You're the least Buttercup out of all of us.
The fresh beauty.
That is true.
Well, that's fair.
And long hair. But yeah, no, I'm much happier.
Okay.
Good. Long hair checks out.
No, these are...
And and the rest. Especially today.
Good. yes, Inigo is slightly hungover today, but looking dashing as ever.
Well, spot on.
Still
he would be,
seeking
wouldn't he?
Vengeance. So, yeah.
So yeah, look, some very happy campers thus far. We also have our rodent of unusual size, our very own swamp rat, Len. Hey, mate.
Mm. Oh, good.
You've got the hair for it at the
moment. I was really hoping you would team me up with, you know, Vicini, and then I would just go, that's inconceivable. Yeah,
I thought about it. I thought, you're not fast enough on the draw for that kind of thing. But maybe you would have been, so fair enough.
Yeah.
And I am the host today. I am our damsel in distress, Gaz, a.k.a. Buttercup. Welcome to today's How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That, which is all about The Princess Bride.
Woo!
Mm.
Now, who had not seen The Princess Bride? Well, listeners to our incredible alternative podcast, Not All Sequels Are Created Equal, may have heard a couple of weeks ago an absolute drubbing that took place, a historic event.
Drubbing.
Where there was a 3-0 victory for a one route. Particular podcaster. Now, that particular podcaster proposed a sequel to The Princess Bride.
It's a sham.
That particular podcaster was me, of course, and I was up against fair old Len here, who revealed in his defeat, revealed that he had never seen The Princess Bride. Why is that, Len? Why had you never seen it?
Yeah, this is a weird one. I have no idea why I haven't seen this film.
You'd barely heard of it.
Yeah, I'm going to use my little air quotation marks here. I love cult classics. Now, do I think this is a cult classic? I don't know. And I'll get into my thoughts on the film later, but it is a kind of film that I would like to watch, especially I'm thinking about things like Labyrinth. I'm thinking about things like Neverending Story. Mm. I'm thinking about, though, that is the vibe or genre that I put this film in. And I love all those films, absolutely adore them. So to not have seen this one is interesting to me. And then it started a couple of things turning in my head, like, why haven't I seen this? Why haven't I heard about it? And we'll get onto that in my thoughts a bit later. But yeah, I guess it just escaped me at the time, or there wasn't anyone around me that could steer me in the direction of this film.
Yeah.
You know, I know you came to it late, Gaz, so you weren't there to talk about it. There was clearly my parents don't know this film. You know, they're quite filmic. They didn't know anything about this film. So yeah, I just missed it. Just missed the boat.
Fair enough.
And it was made in the year of my birth, 1987. So...
We don't accept that as an excuse.
Yes. Okay, fine. Maybe I did see it as a baby, like when I was just like being, you know, swaddled. Is that what it is, a swaddle?
Go to court for that, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, we know that your parents sat you down in front of Child's Play when you were like
Child's
fine,
Play. So correct.
Didn't give you milk in your cereal, so yeah.
Didn't give me milk, what? Only sugar, and RoboCop was the first film that I owned on VHS at the age of 5. So Child's Play at 4, RoboCop at 5, like seeing Murphy get shot to shit at the age of 5 was harrowing.
No, he was like 25,
and yes,
mate.
John,
give him some milk.
and John, yes, I was no milk in my cereal, just 4 teaspoons of sugar.
Why?
Actually, sorry, tablespoons of sugar. Let me correct that.
Mm. What's going on there? Why?
That's just the way I was raised, you know. So Joy
explains
Leonard,
a lot.
That's the way she raised me.
Yeah, they were a sugar family. We're a sugar family here. No milk.
Yeah. Sweet.
That's such a good Simpsons quote. First you get the sugar.
Then the women, then you get the power.
Yeah.
Oh,
so sugar. Good.
All right. Thanks, Len, for enlightening us to the twisted world of your upbringing.
No worries.
Hey, Lucy, can you maybe tell us a little bit about your experiences of this film?
Sure. It's a film that I always think of as being like a long-established classic, but actually I don't think I saw it until I was probably like late teens, maybe even early 20s, like maybe at uni, which is, again, a bit weird. And I loved it. And I think even when you did your sequel... Gaz, I said, oh, it's one of my favourite films. I remember Aaron hadn't seen it, and they were screening it at the British Museum a few years ago. So I bought tickets for us to go and watch it all outside. It fucking pissed it down. So we had to leave about 10 minutes in. It was a bank holiday August.
It was raining dogs and cats.
So it literally was. So we had to leave because you were just sat on the ground and there was no shelter. And yeah, I really loved it. And watching it again, you know what I noticed first thing? This is a Christmas film. It's set at Christmas. I don't know how I'd ever not noticed that. At the beginning. Yeah. He gives him a Christmas present.
What?
No.
And there's like Santa's in the background.
Yeah.
I never noticed it. Watching it again, you know, I did feel like, I don't think this is one of my favourite films anymore. I feel like that moment has passed for me. I still enjoyed it. So like, if that's like a Sunday afternoon film, like perfect. And it's very comforting to me and nostalgic. But actually watching it, I was like, I don't really remember a lot of this. Like I know what happens, but I can't remember how we get there. I don't know. Do you want me to blueberry it, or is it just our experiences?
While we're with you, let's hear your bloob score.
So I would actually give this a 4 blueberry. I think a lot of my memories of it were just of the feeling rather than of actually watching it. But I still really enjoyed it. Still think it's really good. I think stuff like Wesley. I think I used to see the woodenness as part of the character. And now I'm like, is he just not that great an actor? Cary Elwes, however you say his name. Obviously it's dated. It's as old as I am. We're all aged.
Oh, bloody hell.
But no, I give it 4 blueberries. I love it. Still a classic. Would watch it on a Sunday afternoon. It's sort of thing I should watch now. Hungover, a bit delicate. Just sit and watch it. I think I give it 4. I do think it's a cult classic. It's nostalgia driven, and it's very enjoyable to watch.
And now that you've got the idea of the sequel in your mind, it will never.
Yes.
It doesn't quite live up to.
It will never be the same. Maybe that's why. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, sorry. Soz about that.
Mm. Yeah. Cheers.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks, Lucy. Johnny.
Hey, you all right, mate? How you doing? You all right?
How's it going?
Yeah, good. Lucy makes such a good point. Like,
as ever.
Which one? Tell me one of them.
Okay, so if you watch this film and assume that it is all tongue-in-cheek, then actually there's some amazing performances. Like, if you watch it thinking that the whole thing is a parody, it's brilliant. But then there's part of me that there are certain scenes where they actually do look like they are trying to act. And it's like,
yep.
Are they just shit at acting? Is this actually a rubbish film? it's a difficult one. Because, some of it is just so, again, like 87. Quite a lot of the humour is like ahead of its time in a way. I would say, what's the prince's name?
Humperdinck.
Yeah, I mean, fucking hell. When he's tracking them, he's hilarious. Like, absolutely cracks me up.
Yeah, very funny.
But then, sort of see that his character is supposed to be like that. Whereas everyone else, it's a bit like, I mean, look, I'll give Andre the Giant a pass.
Yeah. I love him. I think he's great.
But it's like, yeah.
I had to have subtitles on there, didn't I?
Did you actually?
I had to have them on.
Well, he's French.
Genuinely. It's not even just that. It was even, I found even Inigo, and I'm not bad with accents or anything like that. I do watch a lot of stuff with subtitles, but I did find this, the audio, to be very terrible at certain points. I had to switch the subs on.
You quiet, pipe down. All right, we'll come to you in a second. You can complain then.
Sorry.
But I have to agree in terms of, like, this doesn't resonate with me as like a childhood film. Like, I mean, Short Circuit, which is rubbish.
Oh my God, what a film.
It's rubbish. But
Short Circuit 2 is better. We all agree.
I mean, they're both terrible films. But again,
I'm Johnny Five.
I love it. Sorry, I absolutely love it because that's my childhood. Labyrinth, Never Ending Story.
Correct.
Batteries Not Included.
Oh my Lord, what a film.
Yeah. And then you get like random ones like, I mean, Gremlins is a level above all of those, oh. I would say. Critters, Tremors, like,
oh, you know, I love Tremors.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah. So like these are all films that as an adult, I would go, oh, fucking hell, I remember watching that as a kid. Princess Bride, mm-hmm. not really. And it's like, well, why doesn't it resonate? It's a bit weird. But I rewatched it last night. And me and Michelle, we were like, yeah, actually, it's hilarious. And I do wonder why kind of, I mean, you've said the lead's name, like it's such a weird name, isn't it?
Carrie Elwes.
Yeah. You do sort of look at it and go.
Carrie Elwes, yeah.
Why is it he didn't kick on from this film? And it is probably because he can't really act.
He's not really that, good.
Well.
No.
Yeah. I think his next film after this that was big was what? Robin Hood Men in Tights, which was
He's playing the same character in that as well. I watched a very good film actually with him in called Glory, starring Denzel Washington. I think it's like 1989. Matthew Broderick, definitely watch it. It's great. He's not in it much, but he is in it.
We were thinking about films where he made an impact afterwards, and it's like...
Saw.
I mean, he's in Saw.
Yeah.
He's terrible in Liar, Liar. Well.
Yeah, he's good in that.
Yeah, Liar, Liar. He's good in Liar, Liar.
The Claw.
Ah. Yeah.
I love The Claw.
So, yeah, it's... I don't know. Like, as a film, I enjoy it. And if I watch it, assuming that the whole thing is a piss take, then, yeah, four bloobs. But I don't know. I could see Len ripping this film apart, to be honest.
I think he's going to like it. I think you're both wrong. It's excellent, and it's.
What did John give it?
We like it.
I know you like it, but
did John give it a four?
You're doubting. Yeah, he gave it a four. You're doubting its credentials or its intentions, and you're wrong about that. It is meant as a parody. Mm. It's meant to be a convention bender.
Even that though?
It is, yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. It's fucking funny. And I won't have a word said against it.
Yeah, it is funny. We like it.
I think
you've still got like a damsel in distress that can't do anything until this guy saves her. And she is fucking useless. Mm. Like Buttercup is
useless. I literally did. I did say that to my partner watching this film. I said, if this is a parody, it's not doing a very good job with the female lead role.
Right, again, I was like, come to you in a minute. All right.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
I think the humor in it is like, it's very British actually. Which is, I think, it's really interesting.
It is
like Monty Python type thing.
Yeah, and it's a film. It's a film that it's interesting. You know, John, you made some excellent comparison points. I think, particularly with Neverending Story and Labyrinth, and I'm looking at Len's face. Yes, I know you made those exact comparison points earlier as well, and it does. It's got very similar. Like fundamentals to those types of movie, and I think Labyrinth in particular it really reminds me of, and it's just, it's got a very kind of low budget late 80s British vibe, and it's so weird that it just it didn't kick off in the UK. That's why you two that were old enough, probably, oh no, you one that was old enough when it came out, didn't actually see
it, was
it
in it, because
but it wasn't big in the UK. It did do pretty well in the US, and it became an absolute cult classic in the US, and I think it just never really made it across the Atlantic for some unknown reason.
Maybe it is that, like, because I don't even remember it being on TV as a kid.
Yeah, no,
certainly not.
No,
Christmas,
I don't think
which
it
is
was.
Where you would be like,
yeah,
yeah.
It feels like
something
gained,
like licensing.
It gained legendary status. Mm. It's always on Channel 5 now. That's when I see it.
Yeah, okay. There you go. I was just one off.
It's on again.
I love it, though. I think it's really funny. I think that the acting, Cary Elwes is doing his bit deliberately. And I think he's very good at it. I think he's a great character. all of that. Inigo, amazing.
Yeah, he is very good.
Vicini, I love him so much. He's hilarious.
So funny.
I think this is a great film, and it gets 5 blueberries for me. Len, this is your opportunity to discuss. Now? You have 10 seconds.
Yep. Great. You know what? You're catching me in an interesting day, because today me and my partner are doing a Lord of the Rings marathon the whole way
Can
through.
Can I come too?
And this is, we're just in between. We just finished Two Towers.
It'll be a long
doing this
old
podcast
mile.
And
long
going
old
back
mile,
for Return.
That?
Yeah. And then we're doing Return of the King after this. So, you know, I'm watching the absolute top cinema at the moment. However, last night I watched Princess Bride with high expectations because of the way that you guys talked about it in the sequels podcast. I was sitting there thinking, well, I've missed a cult classic. And I'll go back to this cult classic thing again. John's touched on Labyrinth and stuff like that. I watched this film in utter disbelief at how you consider it to even be good. In fact, I was watching this film thinking, am I on a Worst of Netflix podcast tomorrow? Ooh. Or are we doing a How the Fucks Have You Seen? Have you not seen that? Now,
let me speak.
Worst of Netflix now, starring John and Gaz. Listen.
Yeah, of course. Yes, free promo. What I will say is that there are some very funny moments in this film. I will say I had to get up to a certain point in the film to sort of go, right, okay, I think they're trying to be funny. Now, it's worrying when you have to sit there and go, I think that's what they're doing. The moment that swung it for me, and we'll talk about it in the scenes, was the Reverend at the wedding. That made me piss my pants. That was so
funny. Well, hold
funny. On. That was funny.
I've got to interrupt here. You can't come on here going, this is a Worst of Netflix movie, and then say that it had a comedy scene in it that made you piss your pants.
He said that he thought that at the beginning, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, you haven't let me finish, because Gareth's just getting very protective over this film, which is fine, because he loves it.
And that was the legendary Peter Cook, that Reverend.
Was it?
Yeah.
So I came to this film, obviously, with high expectations, but ultimately, I think it's at odds with itself, because I think John hit the nail on the head. Is it? He says, is it a parody? And if it is a parody, I don't think it nails it at all. I think it treads this line where it's like kind of sort of halfway house between the two. It doesn't go far enough one way to make me think this is definitely a parody, in which case, you know, some moments are very, very good. I mentioned the Reverend scene. We'll talk about scenes in a minute. But a couple of things that those cult classics for me have as well is, we talk about Labyrinth as an example. Labyrinth just destroys this film in every single aspect. Not only have you got a much more iconic, sort of charismatic, you know, David Bowie is the Goblin King, for God's sakes. you also have incredible character creation with puppetry, animatronics, things that really, and it's the same with Neverending Story, it's the same with Gremlins, Critters that John mentioned, all these films. They focus on such great puppetry and great fantasy building. This world is so plain Jane, you know, that it doesn't really lend itself to anything fantastical that really captures my imagination. You know, we have the fire swamp, and the only bit of puppetry, which I will reference, is the rat, which I am apparently characterized as in this podcast. The rat is hilariously shit. Obviously is hilariously shit. But, you know, you don't have that sort of Jim Henson puppetry. Another great one, Dark Crystal. Amazing cult classic film, which, if you haven't seen the Netflix series, definitely check it out. Awesome. But the original, you know, was, you know, very pioneering in the puppeteering world and the creation and the story behind these characters. This obviously is trying to be something. I just don't know if it ever nailed what it was trying to be. There are funny moments. Did I enjoy myself? Did I have a good time watching this film? And this comes back to the age-old question of, if you didn't watch the film at a certain age or a certain time in your life, it loses a bit of that special edge. If I had watched this film when I was younger, a bit more sort of like, and it's one of those things that you go back to and remember that we've talked about so many times on these podcasts about, you have to remember where you were watching this film, when you watched this film, who you were with, the experience you had watching it. Maybe it would hold a special place, maybe a more special place than obviously just watching it now. It just didn't resonate with me in any way. And if I were to rank it, it would be like all those films that John listed. It's
give
worse
me a bloop
than.
Score.
And I wouldn't give something like, I'm going to give it 2 blueberries. I think it goes for something and never hits it. Never hits it. And it's just not for me. It's just not. If you said, give me a cult classic to watch, I'll watch any of those other ones that we've listed in this podcast before this. This would be way down on my list. So yeah, it just didn't work for me, guys. I'm sorry, Gaz. I don't want to upset you. That's what my opinion.
It's an opinions game, you know. That's fine. I just, you know, for a reference point for you, okay? Rotten Tomatoes. We use that as our reference of choice.
Yes, we do. I actually haven't looked at this, so I'm okay. Fascinated to see what it would be.
So I'm gonna do something slightly different here. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to take 2 films that you've brought up, and we'll talk about Princess Bride as well. One of them has a tomato meter score of 73%. One of them has a tomato meter score of 79%. And one of them has a tomato meter score of 97%. The films are Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, and The Princess Bride. What do you reckon, Len? What order do you reckon those are in?
You're going to tell me that Princess Bride's 97. Dark Crystal will be the worst because it was quite badly received at the time. People have understood now it's actually much better than it was. And I'd say the middle one was Labyrinth.
Mm, partly right. It goes Labyrinth on 73%, Dark Crystal on 79%, and The Princess Bride on 97%. Audience score 94%. Compared to Labyrinth is 86 and Dark Crystal's 81. A delightfully postmodern fairy tale, The Princess Bride is a deft, intelligent mix of swashbuckling, romance and comedy that takes an age-old damsel in distress story and makes it fresh. And I could not agree more. But you are entitled to your own opinion.
I'm totally entitled. Some films just don't work for people. And the problem with... And me and John have talked about Rotten Tomatoes before, when we talk about Marvel stuff as well. Aggregate scoring doesn't, it just means that everyone said that film is above 50%.
Yep.
Now, take that however way you want to take it. That everyone could have said that film is a 6 out of 10, Gareth, and it gets 100%. It's just aggregate scoring like that, for me, it doesn't necessarily work. We do reference it because it is a good barometer, and I completely take that on board. But for me... I just can't see a comparison between the creativity behind things like Labyrinth and Dark Crystal and then this. For me, it's chalk and cheese. There's just not the creativity, not the storytelling, not the character creation.
Yeah. I'll go another route then. IMDb, 8.1 for Princess Bride, 7.4 for Labyrinth.
Let's move on from the scores, I think.
Let's be fair. This is not a 2 blueberry film. That is an outrageous score. And you...
But that's Len's opinion, so...
You need to have a word with yourself. Now, in terms of the box office, it's known as a cult classic, not necessarily because it failed in the box office. It did all right. It made a bit of money. But its popularity has grown since the year it came out. It's been a slow burn. What I reckon we should move on to is maybe a little rundown of some of our favourite scenes. Len, we'll skip you because you don't like the film. But Lucy, what was your favourite scene in this movie? And has it changed? I wonder if it's changed over time.
I like the scene with Vicini and Wesley. I just think the dialogue's really funny when they're doing the poisoning and the drinking the wine. That's good scene. I just think he's really funny, Wallace Shawn, yes. Like his performance. Just the things he says and the dialogue is really funny.
He's good.
He's like, so you've made your choice? Not remotely. Like, just the way he speaks is so funny. And he just, the way he's psyching himself out. I love the phrase, never start a land war in Asia. Don't really know what it means, but I just think that's a good
line. That is a good line.
And I just think, yeah, I like that scene.
See, this confuses me because I can't stand him.
What? Really?
I can't stand him.
Inconceivable. Yeah.
Oh, man, honestly. Like, I was half tempted to leave the room, like, every time he's on.
He doesn't last long, to be fair.
Well, thank fuck. Yeah. You know, but...
Thank fuck for that.
Yeah, I don't get it. Maybe it's his voice. Maybe it's the way he looks, which is a harsh thing to say, actually, but...
the weird-looking fella.
Ouch.
It's just, yeah... The inconceivable line. I was like, shut up, up. Like, get rid of this guy, man. Like, you know, it's, look, clearly I'm wrong because, you know, everyone else thinks he's bloody hilarious, but I was just like, I just can't stand the noise that's coming out of this little man.
He's Rex in Toy Story.
Well, no, I get that, you know.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah. That's good.
He's also,
he's all right as a.
He's in Gossip Girl as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The and new Clueless. One or the remake? the old one.
And Clueless, yeah. He's in all of them.
No, I couldn't stand him. So when he dies, that's good.
That's my favourite scene.
That's that scene.
It's got to be the duel, isn't it? That's great.
That is quite fun. But the whole time I'm watching Wesley and I'm just like, who is this shit? I mean, I knew it was Wesley, obviously, at this point when they did the duel.
That would be hilarious if you didn't.
Switched on quickly.
Ooh, I wonder who that guy is.
Why is he dressed up as a shit Zorro? Like, it is literally Zorro. I was just sitting there going, he's fencing, he's got the black mask. I was like, I can't unpicture Zorro here. And he's got the sort of witty repartee that Zorro has. You know, and I was just sitting there going, this is, I'm confused. Very fun. That scene's quite fun. I like Inigo. I like Inigo more later. I feel like
he is so charismatic. Like it's really actually mad. Mandy Patinkin.
He's the best character in this film. Yeah, he's the best character in this film. But the duel here, I do like the bit where he's like, "Do you want me to throw you the rope?" And he's like, "I'm taking my time." That's quite funny. That's quite good. And the duel, the subsequent duel is good as well, so it's not a bad scene.
I'll tell you what I love about that shit scene. You've obviously got the whole thing about, you know, you're good, but there's one thing you don't know is I'm actually right-handed. And then obviously later on he's like, well, yeah, well, actually, so am I, so don't. And I'm like, oh, here we go. This is gonna get interesting.
it's so good but
I'll tell you what I love about this. It's the set. It's just so old school.
Yeah,
I love it. Absolutely love it. Bit where, so every time they like land on the set, you can see like the crash mats. It's great.
Yeah,
I love it. It's a sort of film where it's like, it benefited from like being on VHS, where everything was a little bit
fuzzy,
blurry. Yeah.
It's very charming.
You don't see the boom mic or anything like that, but
Yeah,
I love it. And yeah, you're right. It's but this is the sort of thing where it is charming because it's a bit shit, but it's allowed to be shit. Yeah, I love that scene. And actually, like in terms of the choreography and stuff, it looks good. It looks like how a duel would be. It's not over the top. Like, I mean, fucking hell. I've been watching a little bit of The Matrix recently. In the build-up to obviously watching the trailer for the new
Resurrections.
One. And some of that is just fucking so stupid. Like, things get lost in CGI.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Matrix, Matrix sequels, absolutely abysmal. Yeah. But you take The Matrix, it's called Unreal.
So, you know, watching something like this where it's like it's all happening and it's a bit messy as well. I love it. It's good. It's charming. So that was my favourite scene.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. I think any scene with Inigo is good. You know, maybe I like the one where he confronts his arch nemesis. That is a good scene. And the reason I want to highlight that scene is because did George R. R. Martin take complete inspiration from this
almost
scene?
Almost certainly, because
he's goading him with the same line over and over again, just as Oberyn does to the mountain. And I was sitting there going, oh, okay, George. Okay, I like this. I like what you've done here. And I thought that was quite a powerful thing to do. And obviously at the times I think he had only just written the first Game of Thrones, maybe at this stage. So to have that sort of reference in my mind made that scene a lot more powerful. And it made me think it is quite a powerful device keep repeating
but
that.
If George R. R. Martin had done this, then obviously he'd have Fezzik would like... turn heel, come in and just poke Inigo's eyes out as all the kids watching the film scream. Crushes, that'd be
crush
good,
his skull.
It?
Yeah, that would be good, and it would make perfect sense. I watched that scene completely like, oh yeah, this is cool because it's reminding me of Game of Thrones. I like Inigo. I want him to have his vengeance. And this guy is a total dweeb. Like, this is the thing about this. Like, we're talking about, is it a parody or not? Like this character, Count Rugen, other than the scene where he just turns and runs away, is just a normal character. Is just a normal character before that point. Like everything about him is trope. And
that's fairy tales, isn't it?
It's the same with Humperdinck.
You need some foundational elements of a fairy tale. Otherwise,
I know.
Otherwise, it's got no relation to the thing that it's parodying.
No, I know. I just want it to be a bit funnier. Like, he should have a few more funny lines.
I mean, you pissed yourself at one point. So it's quite a funny film.
But from a sideway character. Like, and I don't know if it was trying to... And I'm still questioning, like, obviously it's trying to be funny. But at the time, I was like, oh, okay, that's trying to be funny. But yeah, I like the scene. I like the duel. And I like the fact he gets his vengeance, because that's very cool.
It is a bit mental how he takes one in the stomach and he's dying.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's like, do you know what?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to die now. Oh, okay.
I like that.
It's like it just went off script.
Yeah.
No, what are you doing, man?
Determination.
You meant to die here.
Determination and strength and virtue is enough to overcome even the most mortal of wounds.
It's very true.
And COVID, listen to some on Facebook.
There you go.
Yeah, on Facebook,
get vaxxed. But even the bit where they're at the window, they're just having a chat. I'm sitting there going, he's bleeding out here. Can you get him on a horse and get out of it?
Yeah, he needs medical attention.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, lovely. I mean, it's annoying. My scenes have been covered. Definitely the fight.
Take the wedding scene. That's funny.
The wedding scene is funny.
When he just goes, what does he say? He says, "Dear wee wabbit." I just cracked up. I couldn't hack it because I really was not expecting that. Like, that was the moment where it did catch me genuinely off guard, and that is the most Monty Python this film goes.
Well,
like that was proper Monty Python.
Well, but Peter Cook is obviously he's on that like British comedy like legend level. So yeah.
That really took.
So I knew that I was going to go last, so I wrote down three scenes, and they were the fight between Wesley and Inigo, obviously. They were the Vicini's death scene with the poison, and then the other thing that I wrote was actually. Something that has been covered in the opposite way. Anything with Vicini in it.
just all of it.
Just all of it. I loved it. I love it. I love it. I love the line when he says, "Inconceivable." You might remember when he says that, John. And
once or twice. And
yeah.
Inigo goes,
God.
Inigo goes, "I do not think that word means what you think
it means." You keep on using that word. "I do not think it means what you think it means." That is also another classic line.
Absolutely classic.
All right, so let's add a couple more things. Kid from the Wonder Years. What's his name again?
Yeah, Fred Savage.
Fred Savage. Hold on. Let's settle down here because we've got a quiz coming soon. So I'm wary.
Oh, sorry.
All right,
but you know, his Peter Falk, who played his granddad, died yesterday.
He died yesterday.
Yeah, literally the day after I watched it, I was like, oh, wow. He's dead. Oh, it was Columbo.
Sake, Len, did you tweet him saying that the film's rubbish and then he died?
Someone hates it. Two blueberries.
Only two blueberries.
Oh, no. I would never do
R.
that.
R.I.P.
I would never do that. I wait for him to listen to the podcast, which unfortunately he can't now. But
bloody hell, having a go.
It was Columbo, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bit mad. But yeah, but the kid from The Wonder Years, Fred Savage.
Yeah.
He's a cute kid, isn't he?
Yes.
He is a good kid. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah. He's... Obviously, he then grew up to be Mole in Austin Powers. But yeah, like he's cast so well in this.
Yeah. I like those
and
scenes.
Obviously, as a dad, and Lucy as a mum, and soon to be Gaz and Len as dads.
Parents
together. But sort of. You know, you'll appreciate more of that because it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's very touching.
The other thing that I wanted to mention, which me and Michelle, I mean, I mention it every time it happened, but every time you see Andre the Giant's hand on like someone's head or near a face,
whoa.
Yeah. It's just like, look at the size of his hand.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
It's mental. Yeah, it is mental. Yeah.
He's very good. It. I like him.
Do you think that's why they called him Andre the Giant? Because he's big.
I don't know. Andre Big Hands.
Andre Big Hands. Little hands. It's ironic. I will give a little shout out to the scene where there's a couple absolutely ridiculous scenes that just really didn't work for me. One that did work for me more. I mean, I hate the suction cup scenes before we even get into that. I was just like, what is this? This is trying to be Blackadder, but terrible. And then the scene with the guy who tries to bring him back from being mostly dead.
Billy Crystal.
That's good. There was some really good funny lines in there. And I was like, this guy's good. This guy's got charisma.
I'm not a witch. I'm your wife.
This guy's going somewhere. Yeah, it's Billy Crystal.
Yeah, that was good. I turned to Mel because she's a paramedic. I said, Are you taking notes here? Because he said he's mostly dead and he's got this blowing device out. I was like, you got one of those in the ambulance or what? She was like, yeah, taking notes. So good.
Did that. Yeah. All right. Well, look, I'm still not convinced you've watched the film, seeing as you've given it two blueberries and two...
Oh, should we talk about some performances? Performances?
Yeah, we can do, but I just love how deflated Gaz is. Like, yeah. We were warned. I did warn you when I was scoring it that Len had the potential to rip this film to shreds.
You've opened that gate. I can promise you this. I bet you Len was coming into this podcast going, I'm going to give this three blueberries. I can tell you that that is an absolute certainty. And look at his face. He knows I'm right. He knows I'm right. And then you know, John, you opened the door for him to give it two blueberries. And he walked through because he thought I'd better. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I will say that John did call it. I was coming in here not to shock you, Gaz. That isn't what I was trying to do. I just knew my score would shock you, and I didn't want to upset you. But
yeah, three blueberries
sorry.
Is a shocking score for this film.
You wouldn't be happy if I gave it three, mate. So I may as well give it one. No difference.
That works.
Yeah, tracks. But can we talk about a few performances? Because I just wanted to touch on the point we made about the Buttercup as a character. One, Buttercup is a horse's name. I'm adamant it's a horse's name. I'm very confused at how that is just her name. It was throwing me off the whole time. Two, the woman has no agency. Like, the only agency she has is suicide, which I find to be ridiculous. If this film is trying to be a parody, like, give her a bit more agency. Like, she had no agency, and I found it very
it's
jarring.
It's not a parody. It's not supposed to be a parody. It's just
supposed
to be...
Gaz is saying it is meant to be a parody.
I don't think it's a parody. It's not taking the piss out of fairy tales.
Fairy
tales.
I think it
a
is.
A different version of one.
I think it's a fairy tale that takes the piss out of itself. That's maybe the difference. But
even if it's doing that, it doesn't give her enough agency to the point where the only out she has is to kill herself. And I sat there watching it like, is that a deadpan? Yeah, is that a deadpan delivery on her line? Because there's a moment where she's walking with the king or something back to her chamber. And she was like, she kisses him on the cheek and says, you've been so nice to me or something. And then he says, he says something. And then she goes, oh, it doesn't matter because I'm going to kill myself when I get back to my chambers. And I was like, Jesus Christ, is that...
Did you see she kissed me?
Yes. I was like...
Disgusting old
the
man.
The tone is so off here. I'm very so confused.
Can I suggest something, Len? I think your sort of... Your idea is that if it's a parody or it has parody elements, that the only way that it can do that is by reversing the conventions. But actually, what a lot of parodies do is they extend, they extrapolate and they exaggerate the conventions. And to have a damsel in distress that is hopeless and can't do anything to help her own situation is the old trope of an old fairy tale style story. And I think that this film is exaggerating that to the nth degree. It's not revolutionizing fairy tales.
The only thing I'll say against that is if you watch something like Hot Shots or Spaceballs or any of these
films, they are parodies.
They are parodies, but at least the female characters have a bit more... they are over the top. They're way over the top. Even something like Austin Powers, you know, they're over the top, but they have a bit more something to do and say. And I just felt her character did nothing the whole time. So that was a shame. But in other good performances, I don't think Carrie Elwes's performance as Wesley is that bad.
No, it's excellent.
I think he's actually trying to be funny the whole time. He's trying to be this sort of cocksure character. I can understand to some how it doesn't work, but at least he has a bit of charisma in this film, which is a charisma void at times. And obviously we'll talk about what's his name? Inigo is the best character in the film, in my opinion. He was elevated above everyone else for the whole time, and his scenes actually had a bit of emotion. Even when he did the talk before the duel, the talk with Count Rugen or whatever he's called, that to me was good. And I really like Inigo, and I think if there was a film just on Inigo, I'm not saying that it's like a Puss in Boots spin-off from Shrek or something,
yeah,
but
do it.
If there was just a spin-off with him, I would totally watch it.
Well, there you go. That's what my next Not All Sequels Are Created Equal is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
A spin-off.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any other performances they'd like to highlight? I think we've spoken about Old Mate Fizzini and
Old
Wallace,
Mate.
But
oh yeah.
Anybody else?
I think old lady that goes, boo! Queen of slime! Queen of trash! Yeah, that's funny.
When that was happening, Lucy, I was like, what is this scene? And then it was lucky it was a dream. I was like, what the fuck has been going on there? That's crazy.
No, yeah, that is an interesting performance.
I just want to say that the rat did a really good performance in the fire swamp.
You would say that.
Yeah, I would say that.
It was Warwick Davis, wasn't it?
That's what I was going to say to you, John. John, I was literally just about to say that. It's mad that you just thought that. I wrote down a note where I was like, where's Warwick Davis? Where is he? And he's in the rat suit, surely. Oh, add this to your cult classics.
He is an action.
Willow, which is far superior to this as well. Write that down. Add that to the list.
Wow. We'll check and see whether you're right or not. No, we won't. What we're going to do is actually test whether you've watched this film or not. Are you ready for the quiz?
Yeah, I will say that obviously you have to get 3 out of 6 correct to not watch the film again. I actually genuinely don't want to watch the film again, so this one will hurt.
Yeah, well...
If I lose.
I had a couple of questions, and I was like, right.
You're going to give me all the hard ones, aren't you? Just to fuck me off now because you're annoyed.
No, I'll be fair. This is a fair quiz. This is a fair test. So, cue the music. Question number one. Andre the Giant plays Fezzik. Which country is Fezzik from? Nice and easy one to start with. Oh, my word.
It's either Iceland or Greenland.
Well, take
it's
a shot,
Greenland.
Mate.
It's Greenland.
Greenland.
Why am I saying Greenland? Is it Greenland?
No,
is
Greenland.
That the way you should pronounce it?
Greenland is the correct pronunciation, but it is a sovereign nation. It's not a sovereign nation. It is part of Denmark. So I was looking for Denmark, I'm afraid.
Shut up. The Greenland's
Yeah, no, Greenland's correct. Well done. Very good. I thought that was an easy one to start off with. And
yeah, well, it's difficult. There's a lot of weird words in this, apart from buttercup.
Like Greenland. Fred Savage is playing a video game at the start of the film. What sort of video game is it?
Fuck. I remember seeing that opening scene and I was like...
Yep,
that's
I would have hoped so.
Game. So it's like... Are you looking for something like, as in a description of the game, like a brawler or a fighting game or a...
Gotta be more than that.
He doesn't want the exact game, does he? He's not playing like Golden Axe or something. That's way before...
He's not playing Golden Axe. No.
What sort of game is it?
Like it's a medieval game.
Is it?
Oh, okay.
Is it?
Well, yeah, it's a medieval game.
Answer. Go on then, I need a second bit.
No, what it's a baseball game! It's a baseball game! It's a baseball game! It's a baseball game! Because he's a Chicago Bears fan. Oh, that was so close.
Well, it wasn't close. You said medieval.
You got it wrong.
No.
You said medieval.
I said baseball game.
You said medieval
game. After
that's
having
wrong.
Said medieval game.
Okay, yeah, so you said, are you sure? And I changed my mind.
No. I said, what sort of medieval game? All right, so that's one out of two so far.
I don't think that's fair.
Wesley and Inigo fight at the top of what? What is the name of the geographic feature they are fighting on top of?
It's the cliffs, but it's the cliffs or something. Something cliffs.
Is it the cliffs of baseball?
No,
cliffs.
But I think I should be given the baseball thing. Oof. Something cliffs. No idea. Cliffs. Angry cliffs.
Okay.
Angry cliffs. The mad cliffs.
Mad cliffs. It's the cliffs of insanity.
I mean, that's unlucky. So I'm two out of three correct. Good.
Yeah,
to know.
Go on. I'll give you baseball.
Correct. Yeah, I was going to say.
I mean, I shouldn't, but I will. What poison?
Don't say, are you sure? Not let me take it.
Didn't say, are you sure?
What poison?
Listen back. What sort of poison kills Vicini? It's
God
odorless.
Knows. It is odorless, and he's built up an... immunity to it.
Uh-huh. The problem for you is if you get this one right, I'm then going to take away the baseball one again. So
easy come, easy go.
Mate, you live in Australia, you should know this.
Something, yeah, it is. And that the Australian line made me laugh because they're all convicts. That also made me chuckle when he said that. Something iodine. Chloric
so
iodine.
That's the answer is iocane.
Fuck.
Yeah. Unlucky. But congratulations, you get to keep the baseball answer. You've got two questions left, and you need one of them to not have to watch it again. And remember fair listener, nobody has failed the quiz yet. Nobody.
No, no
has
one's failed the quiz. That
Wesley,
was a hard one, because that's... Yeah.
Is captured and taken by Count Rugen to the pit of
despair. Pit of despair.
It is the pit
Yay!
Of despair. Excellent. You are now. You've now got two correct answers and only need one more.
I'll try and get the last one right anyway for good measure, just so you know there's no one writes in saying, he's fucking cheated.
I thought there'd be a chance that you'd be struggling here. So, the name of the country that this film is
Florin.
Set in. Very
Florin.
Good. Well done. Yeah. You have got 3.5 out
name.
Of 6. You don't
well
need to
done,
watch it.
Then.
Oh, that's good.
Very
that's good.
That's
good, isn't it? I'm very happy. Just about scraped it.
You did. You did. Well, thank you for watching it. You know.
No worries.
I disagree 2 hours tremendously with your views on the film, but I'm glad that you've seen it. And I think that you actually, when you look back and reflect on your life, it will be richer for the experience.
Maybe in 20 years, I'll look back and go, you know, that was all right. Maybe. That's possible.
Yeah, I think so. Who knows? If you're still alive.
Stick
then.
That on a poster.
Yeah. all right. Thank you very much to you, listener, for joining us on this latest adventure of How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? It doesn't stop there, though. The fun does not stop there. And next up, we have got somebody else who's going to dip into their closet of shame and reveal a film of shame. So, John, enlighten us. What are we watching next?
Yeah. Len's going to enjoy this one. He's really going to enjoy this one. So this is one, this actually came up in a conversation just over a month ago, and I was actually going to watch it. And then I was like, you know what? I'll save it for the pod. It makes sense. The next time we do one of these, I'll jump on, I'll name this film.
Now, can I ask?
Go on, Gaz.
In that conversation, did you pretend that you'd seen it?
No. I actually said the words like, well, funnily enough, that is actually a film I've not seen. And they were like, what? Oh, God, man, that is really Ricky.
Oh, you've done that.
And I was like, who is this person?
Inigo Montoya.
So this is a film that I would say I sort of forgot. This should have been the first film that I mentioned as part of this podcast. And this is definitely one of those films where it's like I have pretended to have seen it in the past. I'm pretty sure Len knows I haven't seen it. Mm. Whether or not he knows that I've still not seen it is a mystery that we'll find out now. Mm. But it's from one of my favourite directors. Certainly one of Len's favourite directors.
Jurassic Park.
And I'd probably extend that to everyone else here. Jurassic Park, yeah. It's RoboCop 3.
Oh, that's terrible.
I'll get straight on with it. So it's Christopher Nolan's Memento.
Ooh.
Never seen it.
Wow. That is mad that you've not seen that film.
It's really strange that you haven't seen that film.
Yeah,
that is strange that you haven't seen that film. That would be a good podcast because, that film is cray-cray. And I can't wait to review it. I've never actually discussed that film with anyone other than Gaz, really. I don't think.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to talk about it for sure.
Nolan. Yeah. I just say, John, can you put my name on that list now? Like, this happens all the time. You always go, one of my favourite, and certainly one of Len's favourite directors, Christopher Nolan. He's my favourite director. He's literally my favourite director. So, that's...
Well, anyway, I look forward to discussing Memento with Len and some other people.
Anyone else?
Good. Because you're a normal person, Gaz, whereas Len, he's over the top, isn't he? He'll be like... Fair. You know, this is the best film I've seen all day. And it's like, okay, just chill out.
Yeah. Not with Princess Bride, I wasn't though, was I?
I do remember one podcast where at the start of the podcast, he told us that this was the best animated show of all time. And by the end of the podcast, he was telling us about another that is the best animated show of all time. So I can't, mate, you must. Yeah.
They were equal first.
Hype beast.
All right,
a hype machine,
so there you go.
Apart from Princess Bride, other than that, everything else is brilliant.
Well, what a wonderful adventure we have all had together. Thank you very much to Ms. Montoya, Lucy.
Prepared to die. That sounded not Spanish.
Sorry, what was that?
I said prepared to die, but yeah, I don't know.
Worse, Caribbean fella. Worse that time. Stop doing it.
Yeah.
All right, that's interesting. That is,
don't know where that came from.
Our dread pirate Roberts, Mr. Roberts, John McCann. Thank you, mate.
Yeah. Mr. Roberts, John McCann. Piss the postman off.
Makes no sense.
What's going on here?
All right, and you little swamp rat, Len.
Yeah. Good. I'll go back into my fire swamp now, which was also hilarious. Just to reference, the pyrotechnics on show in the fire swamp were really next level set.
It was the '80s.
Yeah, honestly,
that's not an excuse.
It was the style at the time.
It reminded me a bit of like, did anyone ever go to Center Parcs? You know, their swimming pools, how they had like cool things going on around the side of it.
Yeah,
it felt like true. I was at Center Parcs.
Center Parcs. All right. Thanks for hosting, Gaz.
Yeah, all thanks, Gaz.
Thanks, gang.
Yeah, sorry I shat on your film, but
thanks, everybody, for listening. All right.
Bye.
Yeah. Goodbye. Two blueberries. Inconceivable.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.